Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Zoom.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter, so much for asking me to come and speak tonight. It's an honor. And I am Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I have been through this process with a very patient, loving, and selfless Big Book Step Study sponsor, and I live in the latter steps. You know, I had one of those days that everything I touched went, you know, completely out of the way. You know, I just one thing after another, disturbances and all that. So I didn't get much time to prepare. Not that I prepare very long, but I like to just get in that frame of mind. But I have to say, reading this chapter tonight, more about alcoholism. You know, we had read 29 pages previously, plus the doctor's opinion. I think that's 8 pages. So, you know, that's 37 pages they've been talking to us about alcohol. And now here they come. And like, we always have to be constantly reminded more about alcoholism. I have to be reminded on a daily basis. They call this the insanity chapter. And I was told to look for the insanity in this chapter, and I could so identify. I started drinking at a very, very young age. I drank for the pursuit of intoxication. And by the time I was 18, my mother had a life insurance policy out on me because of the way I drank, you know. And I continued drinking, but I was a medicinal drinker. I had to drink. I would be holding the bottle, shaking, you know, putting it up to my mouth, sleeping all day. I don't know how I survived. I really don't. I'd get a job and then I'd leave. You know, I was a gin drinker. I identified with Bill that way. And, you know, I stole all the liquor. You know, it was just very easy for me in those days. And that's how I did it, you know. I loved alcohol. I loved everything about it. But towards the end, I didn't like it anymore. And I was trying for a very long time to stop drinking, and I couldn't. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew because of the way I drank, the way I felt the next day, the shame, the remorse, the bitter remorse of self-pity. That's one of the first things I heard in this program, and that was me. Poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. I wallowed in it. It was a drug for me. So, you know, when it starts out here that most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics, I had no problem admitting I was an alcoholic. I knew it. My father was a raging alcoholic, as was I, and I knew what it was. Yet there's some trace of denial there, that mental obsession that takes over, and I have to drink again. And when they talk in here tonight, two of the stories, they talk like I vaguely remember, I had a shadowy recollection. You know, it's almost like the beginning of the blackout, you know, because the mental obsession is so, so strong. And then once I start taking that drink, I have to try and control it. And that's why this chapter meant so much to me, because I knew the mental thing, but I couldn't control my drinking. How many times I went out and just said, I'm just going to have one, you know, I'm just going to have one pitcher of sangria tonight. I'm just going to have this tonight. I'm just, you know, and it never, ever worked. And I was a chugger, you know, I couldn't drink, you know, fast enough. I guzzled everything down. I was never ladylike. I never sat at the bar and sipped my wine. You know, I'd sit at the bar, but I'd have my bottle in my pocketbook, you know, and run to the bathroom and, you know, chug that down. On vacations, I'd have it hidden all over the house, you know, and sit at the dock with everybody like I was drinking like a lady and run up to the house, dun, 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 and go back. And as the day went on, I'd be coming down the, you know, side of the steps, you know, worse because I was trying to control it. So, and I love here, well, you love here, I love everything in this book, but, you know, it's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. They say somewhere in this book, I don't know if it's here, but I'm not like other people. It doesn't say like, I'm not like other people that drink. I'm just different the way my mind works. And I have to fully concede to my innermost self that I am powerless over alcohol. It controls me. I have no way of controlling this, you know, and I know that to be true. And that I can never, ever recover control. You know, how many times did I do try to quit? I'd quit for a few days and then think, you know, here it goes. And I'd start all over again. And I couldn't. And always leading to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And it's a progressive illness. I know that. You know, I was one of the women, you know, that started drinking. And within a few years, you know, my mother's begging me to stop drinking. She'd say, it's in your blood. It's in your blood, please. Because her family were alcoholics. My father, she knew. She saw all the signs in me. So I have to know that it's like people who lose their legs, I'll never grow new ones. It's never, ever going to happen. And I love when they talk about smash into, you know, and I just think of like a big watermelon, just smashing it, you know, into my head, you stubborn head. I have to know that. And trying every imaginable remedy, you know, I did all those things. I have one nephew that I adore, and I'd go on vacation, carry his picture with me, you know, and I'd be drinking gin, but I'd be adding fruit to it, thinking it would balance out, you know, the damage and all that, you know, the insanity. And, you know, I when it says here, you can diagnose yourself, but go to a bar and try some controlled drinking. You know, I have a friend, Jim M., and he'd tell his sponsees if they say, I feel like drinking, and he'd say, here's $10. Go ahead. Come back and tell me if it works. See if you can control it, you know, because I just couldn't. I just couldn't. And when it says here about early in my drinking career, you know, I say today, if I had learned this back then, you know, would I have quit drinking? I don't know. I don't know. It was still too much fun in the early days. I don't know. But I was on a spiritual journey and I used to read Carl Jung. I don't know why, where it came from, but I always got the inner workings of the mind with him. So I identified with this. So, and then they talk about the man of 30, you know, he remained bone dry for 25 years. I often share a story here at this meeting about a woman who drank once a year on New Year's Day. She drank a case of beer and she knew she was an alcoholic because she would just think about it. And once she started drinking, she would drink that whole case of beer, no matter how many times she tried to stop. So there again, it's that control. And the poor guy, he didn't drink for 25 years, started drinking again, and he's dead in 4 years. He couldn't control it, which tells me I will never, ever be able to drink again. And I know that. I know that without a doubt in my mind. So that was the powerful lesson. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. They keep repeating this, you know. And there must be no reservation of any kind that I will be able to drink one drink, a sip, ever again. And, you know, it calls the peculiar mental twist that I have already acquired, that I'm going to be able to do it again. You know, well, what did I hear at a meeting one time? That there's a blood test now that they can give you and it will determine if you're the real alcoholic. And the guy shared, he came in this program when he was young and he was going to go and get the blood test and to see if he was the real alcoholic and maybe go out, you know, try it again. That's the peculiar mental twist that we get all the time. You know, another female alcoholic, she was a nun. She never drank. She was in her 60s. One year she went to the priest house and within a year, she had her first glass sip of wine. And within a year, she was carrying boxes of booze into the convent with books on top. So again, if it's in you, if you're a true alcoholic, it doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are, how long you stop. We will never have control over it ever. And, you know, again, we know years before when my mother was begging me that time, I must have been 16, 17, and I knew she was telling me the truth, but I still went out there because the denial of this disease. But it's explaining this to me here in this chapter. I didn't know this before. I had not a clue of any of this. I just thought, why can't I stop? Why can't I stop? And, you know, see, it's the horror of it, the horror. Because it says, even if I desire to stop, and I wanted to stop, and I could not. And the utter inability to leave it alone. You know, powerful, I don't know why that utter inability always got to me. It's utter inability to stop, to leave it alone. I have to have it. I must have it. You know, and that little vaguely, I remember calling a friend of mine. My husband was having a party, but I wasn't drinking. And she's one of my spiritual friends. And I said, Maureen, come on down. You know, Joe's having a party. I'm not drinking. And within an hour, she was there, and I have a blackout. I think it was actually my husband's 50th birthday. And the next day I woke up and I looked mad at my husband for some reason. I didn't know why. It's like, what's the matter? And when I looked at the video, I was having a nice time at the party. But because, and I don't remember picking up that first drink. When they say here, you don't remember. You know, I know what that is. It just takes that mental obsession. And then I can't control it. You know, it's just so, so powerful. And to guzzle it down. And it says here, the mental states that precede a relapse. And then they talk about Jim, you know, he's a charming guy. He loves his family. He had a deep affection for his family. And, you know, they tell him about the story of him going to work. And he had a resentment because he had to work for this firm. He had words with his boss, but he's not aware of this. He's just not aware of it. And the whole story about him going to the country to sell a car, I mean, that makes no sense to me. Why would I go to the country? You know, people are working or whatever. I just, but then start mixing it. And then suddenly the thought crossed his mind to have more and more and more. So here he was in the asylum and, you know, whatever that was, but it was plain insanity. You know, it was just crazy. It was all in his mind. And lacking in soundness of mind, he couldn't think straight. You know, and I was the kind of drinker too that, you know, my whole brain was just obsessed with drinking and alcohol. It was saturated with it. So I don't take it that step further. I just don't have that ability to take it a step further. And then they call it, you know, the mental phenomenon. They just can't explain it. What would possess us to do this? You know, I remember once eating Swedish meatballs as a kid, and I got so sick of them. And to this day, I can't even look at them. But how sick I got from alcohol. Couldn't lift my head. You know, I mean, so sick. And then you go out and do it again. Like, that's insanity. It's beyond insanity, if you ask me. So, but the insane idea always wins out. And then when it says, next day we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity, how could it have happened? And I have next to it, like, why? Like, just saying, why? You know, what happened? So going out deliberately to get drunk, I think I did that most of the time. But if something pissed me off on one day, you know, I'd take off, you know, roaring away in my car and go get my bottle. And insufficient to the light of what always happened, you know, where we end up and like, what are you thinking? It's a thinking. And I love the Jay Walker story. I love it at first when I read it, but the first time I really heard it, the last one, when he finally goes out and breaks his back, this is how I got it. Somebody runs over to him and says, can I help you? Can I help you? And he looks up and he says, yeah, can you get me a drink? You know, I got with that. You know, you're mangled. The bar is getting lower and lower and lower. and you don't care. You just want another drink. You don't care. You know, your whole world's falling apart. Nothing's going on, but just give me that drink. Like when, you know, Bill with the stock market crash, and he just had to go get that drink. Everything was falling apart, but just the drinking was more important. So, you know, I got with the Jaywalker for sure. It describes us to a T. And, you know, when we say, yeah, I have some of these symptoms, we don't have the depth and weight that we learn in this book. You know, it's still that denial. You know, yeah, I have some of those symptoms, but until I read the words in here, I wrote some of them down, you know, unbearable mental and physical suffering, you know, puzzled, humiliated. I felt all those things. But when I finally was brought through this book and was told like to feel this again, to go through it, because I can, you know, skimp over anything, and to really bring myself back to these feelings and what it did to me. You know, I get reading it tonight, it brings me to tears. You know, it's just heartbreaking where it takes us. So I certainly, you know, when you're reading with it, with, you know, your sponsor, just highlight those words and relive it, you know, because my denial, I forget, you know. That's why they're talking more about alcoholism again today, because I have to be reminded constantly. That's why it's important to come to meetings and hear it, to help a newcomer. You know, and hear that all these people, you know, they had self-knowledge. They knew, and yet they could not stop drinking. You know, it just doesn't work that way. You can't do it. And Fred, you know, he's a great guy too, you know, and he talks about his jitters, his nerves, and, you know, he was very depressed about his condition. And he made up his mind. He had willpower. He had a great mind to do that. And he knew about alcoholism, and he was positive that this past humiliating experience would keep him sober, but it wouldn't fix it. It just wouldn't fix it. And then he wakes up in the hospital, anxious, shaky, you know, all those things again. And yet he had splendid judgment, but could not have splendid judgment with when it came to alcohol. Everywhere else except with alcohol. And when he talks about here, about the subtle insanity. Now, we know it's insane, but subtle, you know, it's so difficult to detect, you know, it's there, but it's gentle. It's almost like a whisper. And you can't, you know, it's there, but the obsession for the drink is so much stronger. So that subtle insanity, you know, it doesn't really mean much to us when that mental obsession comes. And he had a bit of denial. He wasn't as far advanced as most of you fellows, which he wasn't, but he was powerless. You know, that's the thing. He was powerless. And that's what I love about step one, too, that there's so many young people that can come in here today and they just admit they're powerless. They don't have to say they're alcoholics. They have alcoholism. But it's just to say, I am powerless. I am without control over alcohol. And so, you know, he went and, you know, went to the hotel, and he got his ability to think again. And he, you know, he was off his spiritual beam, and he couldn't recall anything. He couldn't recall everything he learned. And then the two guys came to see him and told him again more about alcoholism here. And they explained it again. And, you know, he finally got it. He finally surrendered. He understood it deeply, you know, in the inner cell of every being, every cell of his being, he knew then. And then they talk about the program of action that we get to do. You know, it's... it was drastic. Yeah, it was time consuming, painstaking efforts, they call it. But I had to throw several lifelong conceptions, the way I looked at life, the way I thought about life, the way I thought about this disease, you know, the way I thought about me. But it's, you know, beautiful. And it tells me now that when I do that program of action, these spiritual principles will solve all my problems. And that's when we get into the latter steps, when I have to work on me. All my problems, I had a drinking problem. I had a drinking solved all my problems. It was the answer to everything. It solved my problems. But I'm an alcoholic and my problem is Pat. I've learned in these rooms. And I have to get in there and find out what made me drink. What was the driving force that made me drink the way I did? And I didn't know any of this when I was young. I didn't know. I was a rageaholic. I can give you a thousand reasons why. It doesn't matter. I was. And today, when they talk about, I wouldn't even go back, even if I could. No, I can't imagine living that life again. It was hell. It was horror, hell, a living hell. And the doctor here, Dr. Percy Pollock, here he is, another doctor, risking his reputation, telling him, "You people are too heartbreaking. These doctors, we broke their hearts. They couldn't bear it. But go try a spiritual solution," risking their reputations to tell us that, go and find it must come from a higher power because I don't have it. So thank you for letting me share this evening. And thank you again, Peter, for asking. And have a good night.